to the History for Atheists podcast. I'm Tim O'Neill, and I'm the author of the History for Atheists blog, where I analyse some of the things many of my fellow atheists get wrong about history in general, and the history of religion in particular. If you're an atheist, or just someone interested in common misconceptions and myths about history, this podcast is for you. History for Atheists, and happy Halloween. We see it every year in the lead up to Easter, to Christmas, and to Halloween, articles assuring us that these festivals are pagan in origin. Easter, we are told, was really a pagan fertility festival of a goddess, Eostre, or maybe Ishtar, whose feast day and symbols of bunnies and eggs were co-opted by Christianity, despite this being almost complete nonsense. Similarly, we are told annually that Christmas is actually the ancient pagan festival of Saturnalia, which also had feasting, gift-giving and decorations, despite this also being almost entirely wrong. So it's hardly surprising, therefore, that the most obviously pagan-seeming festival of the year, Halloween, is also presented as a wholly pagan enterprise, which had once again been stolen by Christians and given a superficial makeover. After all, what could a festival that focuses on spirits and spooks, demons and the dark, tricks and pranks have to do with Christianity? All those supernatural elements, spooky costumes and trick-or-treating must surely have a pre-Christian pagan origin. So every October we see a plethora of articles with titles like What's the Real History of Halloween and Why Do We Celebrate It on October 31? Or The Pagan Origins of Halloween, all of which tell us much the same thing. Halloween may be the evening before All Saints Day, but it falls on this date because it was originally the pagan Celtic festival of Samhain, and all the spooky associations that it has come from this pagan festival of the dead. Trick-or-treating, jack-o'-lanterns, dressing in costumes associated with the supernatural, all these things, we are assured, are pagan in origin and date back to pre-Christian times. So it's not surprising that this commonly held idea, one that's reinforced every year, is accepted without question by many atheists, and therefore some of them use this fact to taunt Christians for celebrating what is actually a pagan festival. Unfortunately, some of these atheists are the same ones who preach to others about checking their facts, paying attention to scholarship, and researching evidence for claims. But when it comes to the alleged pagan origins of various festival days, they don't manage to do any of these things. They simply accept the standard claims because it suits them to do so. So the Christian radio host who turned atheist activist, Seth Andrews, assured his 328,000 YouTube followers last December that Christmas is originally pagan, stumbling from one historical howler to the next in the process. Andrews also mentioned Halloween in passing during this extended mangling of history. Speaking of this imaginary co-opting of Halloween by Christians, Andrews tells his listeners this.
Now, this is a lot like what the Catholic Church did with Halloween. Halloween was essentially a Celtic tradition involving the Druid priests and the people dressing up in masks and tricks and treats, very pagan. And the church was coming in going, well, we can't have all this paganism, but people sure like the holiday. So the Catholic Church sort of redressed it, made it All Saints Day, All Saints Eve, or Halloween, changed the date, stamped a brand of ownership on it, and said, aha, now we, the Catholic Church, own the holiday.
Now, these ideas are far from exclusive to atheist activists like Andrews. Modern neo-pagans propagate them with great gusto as well, reclaiming their supposedly pagan holiday from any association with Christianity. In 1993, the British Pagan Federation for Halloween issued a pamphlet making a series of emphatic claims about the origins and significance of the festival. Halloween developed from the Celtic feast of Samhain, which marked the end of summer and the beginning of winter. For the Celts, Samhain was the beginning of the year and the cycle of the seasons. Samhain was a time of change and transformation where both the past and the present met with the uncertain tides of the future yet to come. It was a time for magic and divination, when druids and soothsayers would forecast the events of the coming year. When Christianity became established in Britain, the pagan goddesses and gods were said to have fallen under the rule of the saints. All Hallows Day, November 1st, now known as All Saints Day, celebrates this takeover. The old pagan traditions, however, were not eradicated and lived on in the guise of Halloween, the eve of All Hallows Day or All Saints Day. And here the neo-pagans are in turn responding to evangelical Christians who have long attacked any celebration of Halloween as pagan and also satanic. Most moderate Christians generally regard Halloween as a bit of harmless fun, but the less fun end of Christianity regards it with great suspicion, precisely because of its supposed pagan origins. And articles aimed at fundamentalist audiences, like "What is Halloween and Should Christians Celebrate It?", answer the question with a firm no. Though few take this to the gloriously bonkers heights of the late Jack T. Chick's cartoon tracks on the subject, which Christians were encouraged to leave out for no doubt highly disappointed trick-or-treaters. So atheist activists, neo-pagans, and evangelical Christians are all, oddly, in complete agreement on this topic. Halloween is pagan in origin, and both the date and traditions around it derive from a druidic Celtic festival. This strange consensus is made even more ironic by the fact that these ideas are almost entirely wrong. The name Halloween or Halloween is a traditional contracted form of All Hallows Eve. This in turn is a reference to the Feast of All Saints Day, traditionally called All Hallows Day, or simply All Hallows, or sometimes just Hallowmass in English. In the Catholic liturgical year, All Saints Day falls on November 1st each year, and as a first rank feast day was always celebrated with a vigil and later an octave. This means that it was not only celebrated on the day itself, but also, like Easter Sunday and Christmas Day, with preparatory prayers and a mass the night before. That's the vigil. The octave, an extended 8-day sequence of liturgy following the feast day, was added by Pope Sixtus IV in 1480, though it was removed in the 20th century. The vigil, held the evening before, however, seems to be as old as the feast itself. So Halloween, the vigil, refers to this and to its associated traditions. All Saints Day, as the name would suggest, is a commemoration held in several Christian denominations of all those deceased believers who have attained heaven. In the Western Catholic tradition, it's followed by All Souls Day on November 2nd for the remembrance of the dead generally. The veneration of the triumphant dead is a very old tradition in Christianity, and seems to have its origin in the cults of the martyrs in the first centuries of the religion's history. Annual commemoration of martyred Christians appears in the sources very, very early on, with the martyrdom of Polycarp, circa 150 to 200 AD, referring to this practice. Accordingly, we afterwards took up his bones as being more precious than the most exquisite jewels and more purified than gold, and deposited them in a fitting place, whither being gathered together as opportunity is allowed to us, with joy and rejoicing, the Lord shall grant us to celebrate the anniversary of his martyrdom, both in memory of those who have already finished their course and for the exercising and preparation of those who are yet to walk in their steps. The same text places Polycarp's death and therefore his commemorative day on April 25th, though the exact year is not certain. From the 4th century onward, we find references to annual commemorations of all martyrs and saints on various days, depending on location. So the Orthodox tradition celebrated All Saints Day on the Sunday after Pentecost, and still does, while the Syrian tradition held it on the Friday after Easter. On 13th of May 1609, or perhaps 1610 AD, Pope Boniface IV consecrated the Pantheon in Rome as a Catholic church, and dedicated to All Saints, and ordered an annual celebration of the saints in that church on this day, which is held to this day. At some point in his pontificate, Pope Gregory III dedicated a chapel in St. Peter's to All Saints and Martyrs, and some accounts say this was on November 1st, making this the possible origin for the Western date for All Saints Day. Sometime later, in the 8th century, the English Martyrologicum Poeticum, a poetic calendar of the saints' days and other feast days celebrated at York, makes a clear reference to a feast of All Saints on November 1st. As a jewel worn on the brow sparkles time and again, so November at its beginning is resplendent with all the praise given to All Saints. Given this was a practice at York, it's not surprising to find the great scholar Alcuin of York writing to his friend Arno, Bishop of Salzburg, urging him to celebrate All Saints Day on November 1st. On the calends of November is the Solemnity of All the Saints. See, Venerable Father Arno, you have marked the Solemnity of All the Saints just as we said. Keep that ever in mind and never cease to celebrate it on that annual date. This urging by Alcuin suggests that All Saints Day was perhaps celebrated on other dates, and Alcuin by this stage, back at the court of the Frankish ruler Charlemagne at Aachen, preferred the tradition he knew from England. Or it could be that he's urging the importance of the feast rather than the date of the celebrations per se. What we do know is the November 1st date caught on in Francia, with Pope Gregory IV promulgating it as the date for All Saints Day in both East and West Francia, and this was reinforced by an edict by Louis the Pious in 835 AD, as recorded in the entry for that year in the Chronicle of Sigibert of Gembloux. With the date established across the Frankish Empire, it became more widely adopted, and over the next two centuries became standard liturgical practice across Western Catholic Europe. What is obviously missing from all of this is any hint of any influence by anything pagan, let alone some Irish or Celtic festival presided over by Druids. Even if the dedication of the chapel in St. Peter's by Gregory III was not the origin of the November 1st date, and the practice arose independently in England and then spread to Francia via the influence of English scholars like Alcuin, there's a serious problem with the idea that it was due to Irish Celtic influence on England. This is because the earliest Irish reference to an All Saints Day does not have it celebrated on November 1st, but on April 20th. The martyrology of Engus is another martyrology attributed to St. Engus of Tulloch. It seems to date to the 9th century and is based on earlier English martyrologies like that of Bede, but with significant local Irish additions. It mentions a Feast of All Saints in its listing for April 20. Day of the suffering of Herodias, priest who was crucified to Desire, feast in Rome, that noble town of the whole of the saints of Europe. Under November the 1st, on the other hand, we do find, finally, a reference to Samhain, but it's not associated with commemorating All Saints, but rather with three Irish saints only. Lonan, Colman, Cronan, with their bright sunny followers, the hosts of Hilary, many sure in noble stormy Samhain. So while the English were already celebrating All Saints Day on November 1st in the 8th century, and that date became prominent in Francia by the mid-9th century, the Irish were doing so on April 20, with stormy Samhain, the feast of three local holy men only. As the esteemed historian of folklore Ronald Hutton summarises in his Stations of the Sun, Charlemagne's favourite churchman Alcuin was keeping it by 800 AD, as were his friend Arno of Salzburg and a church in Bavaria. Pope Gregory IV, therefore, was endorsing and adopting a practice which had begun in Northern Europe. It had not, however, started in Ireland, where the Feri of Angus and the Martyrology of Tulloch prove that the early medieval churches celebrated the Feast of All Saints on 20th April. This makes nonsense of the notion that the November date was chosen because of Celtic influence. So Hutton favours a Germanic origin for the date, either the practice of the English Church which influenced Francia, or perhaps the other way around. Or it could be that the Roman celebration on that day deriving from Gregory III spread to both. But since the Irish in the same period seem to have used April 20 for their date and paid little regard to November 1st at this stage, the claim that the whole thing began in Ireland as an originally pagan festival makes absolutely no sense. The claims about the origins of Halloween lying with Samhain tend to be very detailed about this Celtic festival, with references to all of the key elements of it that thus made their way into Halloween traditions: trick-or-treating, jack-o'-lanterns, dressing in costumes and masks, and a general association with the dead. But when we turn to what we know about this pre-Christian feast day, we define few to none of these elements. There's certainly some evidence that November 1st was a key date for several cultures across the Celtic language group, marking the end of summer. The Irish word Samhain seems derived from an ancient Celtic word meaning summer. A key piece of evidence here is the Coligny calendar, an inscribed bronze tablet discovered in southeast France in 1897. This represents a lunisolar calendar which reconciles moon phases with the solar year over a cycle of 5 years via the insertion of an occasional intercalary leap month, and it dates to the 1st century BC. The inscriptions on the calendar use Roman script and numerals, but the names of the month on it are in the Celtic language of the ancient Gauls. These include a month called Samhainos at the beginning of the year, derived from the Gaulish root Samo, meaning summer. This is almost certainly a cognate with the Irish Samhain, but Samhainos began in May and didn't fall in November. This means Samhain is a compound word meaning something like summer's end. As already mentioned, the 9th century martyrology of Iningus refers to November 1st as Stormy Samhain, and the early 10th century Welsh text, the Laws of Hywel Dda, repeatedly uses the calends of winter, i.e. November 1st, as a key annual demarcation for various laws, again indicating the end of summer on this day as an important date. What we do not find in any early references to either Samhain or the calendrical significance of November 1st as the end of summer is references to rituals or religious practices. The early Irish glossary, Sanus Cormac, which dates to the 10th century, is a word list with etymologies and explanations of over 1,400 Irish words, and it mentions the spring festival of Beltane on May 1st and refers to druids driving cattle between two ritual fires to protect them for the coming year on that date. But it doesn't mention Samhain at all, let alone any rituals associated with it. The Ulster Cycle epics, possibly dating to the 10th century or earlier, make a couple of mentions of Samhain. The Wooing of Emma lists Samhain as one of the year's quarter days, along with Imbolc, 1st of February, Beltane, 1st of May, and Lusdana, 1st of August. And the Sickbed of Cuchulain gives us some more details about what marking Samhain might have traditionally entailed. Every year, the men of Ulster were accustomed to hold festival together, and the time when they held it was for 3 days before Samhain, the summer end, and for 3 days after that day, and upon Samhain itself. And the time that is spoken of is when the men of Ulster were in the plain of Merthmenny, and they used to keep that festival every year, nor was there a thing in the world that they would do at that time except sports and marketings and splendours and pomps and feasting and eating. And it's from that custom of theirs that the festival of Samhain has descended, that is now held throughout the whole of Ireland. So here we get a lot of feasting and splendours and pomps, but no rituals or any indication of overtly religious significance. It seems more of a chance to get together and have a good time before the weather turns too wintry. So it's not until the 12th century, in the boyhood deeds of Finn McCool, that we find something supernatural associated with references to Samhain. However, Finn went to Caithern, the son of Fintan, further to learn poetry with him. At that time, there was a very beautiful maiden in Brí Eli, that is to say the fairy knoll of Brí Eli, and the name of that maiden was Eli. The men of Ireland were at feud about that maiden. One man after another went to woo her. Every year on Samhain, the wooing used to take place, for the fairy mounds of Ireland were always open about Samhain. For on Samhain, nothing could ever be hidden in the fairy mounds. To each man that went to woo her, this used to happen. One of his people was slain. This was done to mark the occasion, nor was it ever found out who did it. The idea that the world of the Shay, the fairy folk of Irish legend, is open to the mundane world at certain times of the year is also found associated with Beltane. But even here we don't find any indication of ritual or religious observance. Perhaps the closest we get to that is in the Lore of the Places, also from the 12th century, which tells a story of St. Patrick throwing down the idol of the pagan god Crom Cruach at Moy Slecht, the plain of prostration. The Lore of the Places says, "The firstlings of every issue and the chief scions of every clan were sacrificed to this idol." It also details how every year at Samhain, the High King would lead the people in prostrating themselves before the idol of Crom Cruach, and they would fling themselves on the ground so violently that three quarters of them died each time. Other later versions of how Patrick entered the worship of this god also mention sacrifices of children to this idol, but makes no mention of Samhain. Ronald Hutton is very sceptical about whether these stories reflect anything historical and concludes, The moist slave story sounds like medieval Christian fantasy, developing over time and growing more lurid with each retelling. It should be noted here that even in these stories, the references to child sacrifice to this idol are not associated with Samhain. All this means that despite some rather strained attempts to make these and other references conform to the idea of Samhain as some kind of ancient Irish festival of the dead, we really don't have any clear evidence of Samhain as a religious festival at all. And we definitely do not have so much as a hint of the alleged pagan practices that are the origin of modern Halloween traditions of trick-or-treating, jack-o'-lanterns, and so on. So what is the origin of the claims that these things come from Samhain? The earliest reference to Samhain as a time of ritual sacrifice and druidic ceremony comes in 1634, in an account by Geoffrey Keating, a priest, poet, and antiquarian for Tipperary, who Hutton describes as the thoroughly unreliable 17th century antiquary. Keating's account mingles a few elements from the medieval sources with a lot of lurid fantasy. It was there the fire of Tlachta was instituted, at which it was their custom to assemble and bring together the druids of Ireland on the eve of Samhain to offer sacrifice to all the gods. It was at that fire they used to burn their victims, and it was of obligation under the penalty of fine to quench the fires of Ireland on that night, and the men of Ireland were forbidden to kindle fires except from that fire. And for each fire that was kindled from it in Ireland, the King of Munster received a tax of a scrable or 3 pence, since the land on which Tlachta belongs was part of Munster and given to Meath. Like Hutton, all other modern scholars reject this account as largely lurid fantasy on Keating's part, cobbled together out of the references to fire rituals associated with other times of the year, with a heavy layer of Keating's imagination. Unfortunately, as one of the few early and seemingly scholarly books on early Ireland, Keating's work was highly influential on later claims about Halloween's pagan origins. Here we find the druids and the human sacrifice found repeatedly in later claims about pre-Christian Halloween, along with a garbled origin story for the traditions around fires, which did feature as part of many Halloween practices. Partly thanks to Keating, the association of the supposed rituals of the druids as the origin of various traditional practices and ancient sites became a mainstay of antiquarian speculation from the 17th to the early 19th century, with John Aubrey's Monumenta Britannica of 1693 fixing the still persistent association of druids and Stonehenge in the popular imagination. Protestant polemicists took up this idea to blame the druids for all manner of residual Catholic traditions, which they condemned not just as popery, but also traced to bloodthirsty pagan origins, a line of argument that also persists to this day and leads directly to fervid evangelical fantasies like the Jack T. Chick tracts noted earlier. By the 19th century, better researchers began to examine the evidence more carefully, though the pagan origins idea established since Keating's time continued to be their key assumption. In 1886, the Welsh-born Oxford philologist Sir John Rees argued in his Lectures on the Origin and Growth of Religion as illustrated by Celtic Heathendom, 1886, that the November 1st date had been the Celtic New Year, largely based on Welsh folklore associating Halloween with new beginnings. This idea was greatly expanded by Sir James Fraser in his heavily influential The Golden Bough, a study in comparative religion, originally published in 2 volumes in 1890 and eventually expanded to 12 volumes in its third edition, published between 1906 and 1915. Fraser's book caused something of a scandal for treating Christianity like any other form of ancient mythology, but it effectively established the discipline of comparative religion in the English-speaking world. It was, and remains, culturally significant, in that it influenced everyone from Sigmund Freud to Joseph Campbell and writers and artists from Robert Graves to Jim Morrison. This is despite the fact modern scholars find much of Fraser's arguments completely unconvincing. For Fraser, Samhain had been nothing less than the pagan Celtic feast of the dead. Like Rees, he saw it as marking the death of the old year, but also as a numinous time when the supernatural walked abroad. But he argued that it was common for many cultures to honour their dead at the close of the year, and so he therefore argued that the Christian Feast of All Saints and All Souls on November 1st and 2nd had to have their origins in this posited earlier Celtic festival. Of course, this is all based on the idea that All Saints began in Ireland and the Celtic tradition and transferred to the rest of Europe. But as discussed above, this does not seem to be the case, with the earlier Irish celebration of All Saints on April 20 giving way to the date established in Francia in the 9th century, November 1st. Fraser got the influence completely the wrong way around. But thanks to the influence of the Golden Bough on popular culture, the idea that there was a Celtic Day of the Dead as the origin of both the date of Halloween and its traditions involving ghosts and the supernatural persists. This is mixed with the anti-papist claims in the Protestant tradition that links this supposed pagan origin to Druids and human sacrifice that also persists in some version of the Halloween origin myth story. So, we are assured, the practices of wearing costumes and masks, trick-or-treating, Halloween games and jack-o'-lanterns are firmly pagan. The problem with the claim that the key traditions of Halloween are all pagan in origin is the same as that with all such arguments. They assume that no new traditions could possibly have arisen in the century since the conversion to Christianity, and so all traditions which are old, or at least seem old, must be pre-Christian and therefore pagan. There are many unwarranted assumptions in this whole line of reasoning, but it seems to be widely accepted without much question. As it happens, the elements of Halloween which may be pre-Christian are actually not very common today, and the most common practices today do not seem to be pre-Christian at all, let alone pagan. One of the most common elements in traditional Halloween folklore involves the lighting of fires. This seems to be the source of Geoffrey Keating's antiquarian fantasy about druids burning people alive at Samhain. But fires that are watched as they burn out over the course of the night at Halloween are found in traditions across Ireland, Scotland, and many parts of Wales. These Hallowmas fires were discouraged in Protestant areas as a holdover from Catholic traditions, since watching the fire as it burned down while remembering the dead was part of the tradition in many parts and was clearly connected to the feasts of All Saints and All Souls. But there are elements in these practices that could indicate a pre-Christian origin, such as the Scottish tradition that the fire was to be burned to keep the fairies away or to drive off witches. The fire traditions are associated with divination, which is another cluster of practices around Halloween that has largely died out. In North Wales, each person puts a white pebble in the fire, and if any of them are missing from the ashes the next day, this is a sign that that person would die that year. Similar practices in Scotland could indicate a pre-Christian origin for these ideas, though there's really no way of being sure of this. Other better known and still popular traditions do not seem to have a pagan origin at all, despite persistent claims to the contrary. The lurid fantasies of druids carrying off people for human sacrifices, unless they are placated with gifts of food, are often alleged to be the origin of trick-or-treating. In fact, this seems to have had its origin in a very Christian practice. Since All Saints and All Souls were feasts focused on the afterlife, in the old Catholic tradition they were also a time when charity was encouraged by the living to boost their chances of attaining heaven. So distributing food to the poor was a central part of All Hallowtide, the three-day period from Halloween to the end of All Souls. Special soul cakes were traditionally baked to be given as charity to the poor, and other seasonal foods such as nuts, apples and berries, all abundant in early autumn, were also distributed. Poorer people going to houses to receive food as charity gave rise to visiting others in disguise to demand soul cakes as part of a game. This took many forms that varied by region, but this practice of guising or mumming was part of celebratory folk practices at various times of the year, including Christmas. At Halloween, the guisers often sang soul cake songs, demanding traditional food gifts in return for a blessing. In some places, the practice meant any guiser could enter the house and had to be welcomed and given soul cakes, while the owners pretended to not know who the visitors were. This is why traditional guiser masks were designed largely to hide someone's identity from their neighbours, rather than the modern version of Halloween costume. In some versions, the guisers simply painted their faces black. The game consisted of people in very close-knit communities pretending not to know each other while breaking social norms. This element developed into a kind of misrule, again, something seen at Christmas, where acts of damage and violence were threatened and minor acts carried out if the guises were not rewarded with food. The clear line of descent from this to modern trick-or-treating is pretty obvious. That this all arose from a Christian practice of charity on a holy day is also clear, though in places it also involved giving out food for the dead. Again, it's impossible to tell if this too was a pre-Reformation Christian practice or remnant of something pre-Christian. Guises often carried vegetables carved with faces holding candles as lanterns as they went around the houses of their community. These could be turnips or mangel wurzels, and this practice was common in Ireland, but also in northern Scotland and in some parts of Somerset, where they are called punkies or spunkies. This was a dialect word for the phenomenon of ignited marsh gas, thought to be apparitions, and in eastern England, these will-o'-the-wisps were referred to as jack-o'-lanterns. This has given us the Irish, by way of the United States, modern version of their name, though now they're made out of pumpkins. Again, the origin of the practice is obscure, and there's no way of knowing if it was a pre- or post-Christian tradition. Other traditional Halloween games and practices involve various forms of divination to predict the future regarding death, marriage, and children. Surprisingly, many Halloween games often involved apples, such as bobbing for apples, or nuts, given these were collected around this time of year. But the most common modern Halloween traditions are a few Irish and Scottish practices that were transplanted to the United States, and they really only became popularized after the Second World War. The influence of American popular culture and the commercial opportunities the modern American-style festival provides the manufacturers of confectionery, toys, and costumes means that these days, the commercialized version of the holiday is now almost international. So, is it pagan? The short answer is no. Contrary to Seth Andrews' claims about the Catholic Church stealing a pagan festival involving Druid priests and people dressing up in masks and tricks and treats, the date and most of the traditions are firmly Christian in origin. The November 1st date, that is the centre of All Hallows Mass, was not derived from any Celtic festival, and the original Irish date for All Saints moved from April 20 to November 1st due to the influence of continental and English liturgical Christian practice. That this meant the new All Saints Day in Ireland fell on the quarter day of Samhain was pure coincidence. Contrary to repeated insistence in popular sources, scholars can find no clear indication of any religious or ritual practices on Samhain, and certainly none that can be traced to later Halloween traditions. Masks, costumes, trick-or-treating, Halloween games, etc., are all known to have traditional Christian origins or simply can't be linked to anything definitely pre-Christian. Possibly the main thing that does connect Halloween to earlier beliefs about Samhain is the idea that it's a numinous time of the year when this world and the other world become closer, and thus it's a time to be wary of malevolent entities. But how much of that idea comes from pre-Christian beliefs and how much is a result of a Christian feast focused on the afterlife and the dead is again impossible to tell. It's most likely some combination of the two. What is very clear is that anti-theistic activists like Seth Andrews simply do not care about details, let alone the truth behind popular claims about Halloween being pagan in origin and simply stolen by Christianity. Despite exhorting others to question everything and check their facts, supposed rationalists like Andrews do not bother to practice what they preach, if any idea fits neatly enough with their strong confirmation biases. And that is genuinely scary. Happy Halloween. See you again here soon. This has been another History for Atheists podcast. If you've enjoyed this show, please subscribe today. You can also subscribe to the History for Atheists YouTube channel for video versions of this and other shows, or to the original History for Atheists blog for an even more extensive collection of detailed articles on how to avoid errors about religious history. Have a great day.